Madame Vacher is an elderly person, who for the past 40 years has kept a lodging house in the Rue Neuve Saint-Geneviève, in the district that lies between the Latin Quarter and the Faubourg Saint-Marcel. Her house, known in the neighborhood as the Maison Vacher, receives men and women, old and young, and no word has ever been breathed against her respectable establishment, but, at the same time, it must be said that as a matter of fact no young woman has been under her roof for 30 years, and that if a young man stays there for any length of time it is a sure sign that his allowance must be of the slenderest. In 1819, however, the time when this drama opens, there was an almost penniless young girl among Madame Vacher's boarders. That word drama has been somewhat discredited of late, it has been overworked and twisted to strange uses in these days of dolorous literature, but it must do service again here, not because this story is dramatic in the restricted sense of the word, but because some tears may perhaps be shed intra et extramuros before it is over. Will anyone without the walls of Paris understand it? It is open to doubt. The only audience who could appreciate the results of close observation, the careful reproduction of minute detail in local color, are dwellers between the heights of Montrouge and Montmartre, in a vale of crumbling stucco watered by streams of black mud, a vale of sorrows which are a real and joys too often hollow, but this audience is so accustomed to terrible sensations, that only some unimaginable and well-named possible woe could produce any lasting impression there. Now and again there are tragedies so awful and so grand by reason of the complication of virtues and vices that bring them about, that egotism and selfishness are forced to pause and are moved to pity, but the impression that they receive is like luscious fruit, soon consumed. Civilization, like the car of Juggernaut, is scarcely stayed perceptibly in its progress by a heart less easy to break than the others that lie in its course. This also is broken, and civilization continues on her course triumphant. And you, too, will do the like, you who with this book in your white hand will sink back among the cushions of your armchair, and say to yourself, perhaps this may amuse me. You will read the story of Father Goriot's secret woes, and, dining thereafter with an unspoiled appetite, will lay the blame of your insensibility upon the writer, and accuse him of exaggeration, of writing romances. Ah! Once for all, this drama is neither a fiction nor a romance. All is true, so true, that everyone can discern the elements of the tragedy in his own house, perhaps in his own heart. The lodging house is Madame Vacher's own property. It is still standing in the lower end of the Rue Neuve Saint-Geneviève, just where the road slopes so sharply down to the Rue de l'Arbalète, that wheeled traffic seldom passes that way, because it is so stony and steep. This position is sufficient to account for the silence prevalent in the streets shut in between the Dome of the Pantheon and the Dome of the Val de Grace, two conspicuous public buildings which give a yellowish tone to the landscape and darken the whole district that lies beneath the shadow of their leaden-hued cupolas. In that district the pavements are clean and dry, there is neither mud nor water in the gutters, grass grows in the chinks of the walls. The most heedless passerby feels the depressing influences of a place where the sound of wheels creates a sensation. There is a grim look about the houses, a suggestion of a jail about those high garden walls. A Parisian straying into a suburb apparently composed of lodging houses and public institutions would see poverty and dullness, old age lying down to die, and joyous youth condemned to drudgery. It is the ugliest quarter of Paris, and, it may be added, the least known. But, before all things, the Rue Neuve Saint-Geneviève is like a bronze frame for a picture for which the mind cannot be too well prepared by the contemplation of sad hues and sober images. Even so, step by step the daylight decreases, and the cicerone's droning voice grows hollower as the traveler descends into the catacombs. The comparison holds good. Who shall say which is more ghastly, the sight of the bleached skulls or of dried-up human hearts? The front of the lodging house is at right angles to the road, and looks out upon a little garden, so that you see the side of the house in section, as it were, from the Rue Neuve Saint-Geneviève. Beneath the wall of the house front there lies a channel, a fathom wide, paved with cobblestones, and beside it runs a gravel walk bordered by geraniums and oleanders and pomegranates set in great blue and white glazed earthenware pots. Access into the graveled walk is afforded by a door, above which the words Maison Vacher may be read, and beneath, in rather smaller letters, lodgings for both sexes, etc. During the day a glimpse into the garden is easily obtained through a wicket to which a bell is attached. On the opposite wall, at the further end of the graveled walk, a green marble arch was painted once upon a time by a local artist, and in this semblance of a shrine a statue representing Cupid is installed, a Parisian Cupid, so blistered and disfigured that he looks like a candidate for one of the adjacent hospitals, and might suggest an allegory to lovers of symbolism. The half-obliterated inscription on the pedestal beneath determines the date of this work of art, for it bears witness to the widespread enthusiasm felt for Voltaire on his return to Paris in 1777. Whoe'er thou art, thy master see, he is, or was, or ought to be. At night the wicket gate is replaced by a solid door. The little garden is no wider than the front of the house, it is shut in between the wall of the street and the partition wall of the neighboring house. A mantle of ivy conceals the bricks and attracts the eyes of passers-by to an effect which is picturesque in Paris, for each of the walls is covered with trellised vines that yield a scanty dusty crop of fruit, and furnish besides a subject of conversation for Madame Vacher and her lodgers. Every year the widow trembles for her vintage. A straight path beneath the walls on either side of the garden leads to a clump of lime trees at the further end of it, lime trees, as Madame Vacher persists in calling them, in spite of the fact that she was at a confluence, and regardless of repeated corrections from her lodgers. The central space between the walls is filled with artichokes and rows of pyramid fruit trees, and surrounded by a border of lettuce, potherbs, and parsley. Under the lime trees there are a few green painted garden seats and a wooden table, and hither, during the dog days, such of the lodgers as are rich enough to indulge in a cup of coffee come to take their pleasure, though it is hot enough to roast eggs even in the shade. The house itself is three stories high, without counting the attics under the roof. It is built of rough stone, and covered with the yellowish stucco that gives a mean appearance to almost every house in Paris. There are five windows in each story in the front of the house, all the blinds visible through the small square panes are drawn up awry, so that the lines are all at cross purposes. At the side of the house there are but two windows on each floor, and the lowest of all are adorned with a heavy iron grating. Behind the house a yard extends for some 20 feet, a space inhabited by a happy family of pigs, poultry, and rabbits. The woodshed is situated on the further side, and on the wall between the woodshed and the kitchen window hangs the meat safe, just above the place where the sink discharges its greasy streams. The cook sweeps all the refuse out through a little door into the room Veuve Sainte-Geneviève, and frequently cleanses the yard with copious supplies of water, under pain of pestilence. The house might have been built on purpose for its present uses. Access is given by a French window to the first room on the ground floor, a sitting room which looks out upon the street through the two barn windows already mentioned. Another door opens out of it into the dining room, which is separated from the kitchen by the well of the staircase, the steps being constructed partly of wood, partly of tiles, which are colored and beeswaxed. Nothing can be more depressing than the sight of that sitting room. The furniture is covered with horsehair woven in alternate dull and glossy stripes. There is a round table in the middle, with a purplish-red marble top, on which there stands, by way of ornament, the inevitable white china tea service, covered with a half-effaced gilt network. The floor is sufficiently uneven, the wainscot rises to elbow height, and the rest of the wall space is decorated with a varnished paper, on which the principal scenes from Telemaque are depicted, the various classical personages being colored. The subject between the two windows is the banquet given by Calypso to the son of Ulysses, displayed thereon for the admiration of the boarders, and has furnished jokes these 40 years to the young men who show themselves superior to their position by making fun of the dinners to which poverty condemns them. The hearth is always so clean and neat that it is evident that a fire is only kindled there on great occasions. The stone chimney piece is adorned by a couple of vases filled with faded artificial flowers imprisoned under glass shades, on either side of a bluish marble clock in the very worst taste. The first room exhales an odor for which there is no name in the language, and which should be called the odeur de pension. The damp atmosphere sends a chill through you as you breathe it. It has a stuffy, musty, and rancid quality. It permeates your clothing. After dinner scents seem to be mingled in it with smells from the kitchen and scullery and the reek of a hospital. It might be possible to describe it if someone should discover a process by which to distill from the atmosphere all the nauseating elements with which it is charged by the catarrhal exhalations of every individual lodger, young or old. Yet, in spite of these stale horrors, the sitting room is as charming and as delicately perfumed as a boudoir, when compared with the adjoining dining room. The paneled walls of that apartment were once painted some color, now a matter of conjecture, for the surface is encrusted with accumulated layers of grimy deposit, which cover it with fantastic outlines. A collection of dim-ribbed glass decanters, metal discs with a satin sheen on them, and piles of blue-edged earthenware plates of terrain ware cover the sticky surfaces of the sideboards that line the room. In a corner stands a box containing a set of numbered pigeonholes, in which the lodger's table napkins, more or less soiled and stained with wine, are kept. Here you see that indestructible furniture never met with elsewhere, which finds its way into lodging houses much as the wrecks of our civilization drift into hospitals for incurables. You expect in such places as these to find the weather house whence a Capuchin issues on wet days, You look to find the execrable engravings which spoil your appetite, framed every one in a black varnished frame, with a gilt beading round it, you know the sort of tortoiseshell clock case, inlaid with brass, the green stove, the argand lamps, covered with oil and dust, have met your eyes before. The oilcloth which covers the long table is so greasy that a waggish extern will write his name on the surface, using his thumbnail as a style. The chairs are broken down invalids, the wretched little hempen mats slip away from under your feet without slipping away for good, and finally, the foot warmers are miserable wrecks, hingeless, charred, broken away about the holes. It would be impossible to give an idea of the old, rotten, shaky, cranky, worm-eaten, halt, maimed, one-eyed, rickety, and ramshackle condition of the furniture without an exhaustive description, which would delay the progress of the story to an extent that impatient people would not pardon. The red tiles of the floor are full of depressions brought about by scouring and periodical renewings of color. In short, there is no illusory grace left to the poverty that reigns here. It is dire, parsimonious, concentrated, threadbare poverty. As yet it has not sunk into the mire, it is only splashed by it, and though not in rags as yet, its clothing is ready to drop to pieces. This apartment is in all its glory at 7 o'clock in the morning, when Madame Vacher's cat appears, announcing the near approach of his mistress, and jumps upon the sideboards to sniff at the milk in the bowls, each protected by a plate, while he purrs his morning greeting to the world. A moment later the widow shows her face. She is tricked out in a net cap attached to a false front set on her eye, and shuffles into the room in her slipshod fashion. She is an oldish woman, with a bloated countenance, and a nose like a parrot's beak set in the middle of it. Her fat little hands, she is as sleek as a church rat, and her shapeless, slouching figure are in keeping with the room that reeks of misfortune, where hope is reduced to speculate for the meanest stakes. Madame Vacher alone can breathe that tainted air without being disheartened by it. Her face is as fresh as a frosty morning in autumn. There are wrinkles about the eyes that vary in their expression from the set smile of a ballet dancer to the dark, suspicious scowl of a discounter of bills. In short, she is at once the embodiment and interpretation of her lodging house, as surely as her lodging house implies the existence of its mistress. You can no more imagine the one without the other, than you can think of a jail without a turnkey. The unwholesome corpulence of the little woman is produced by the life she leads, just as typhus fever is bred in the tainted air of a hospital. The very knitted woolen petticoat that she wears beneath a skirt made of an old gown, with the wadding protruding through the rents in the material, is a sort of epitome of the sitting room, the dining room, and the little garden. It discovers the cook, it foreshadows the lodgers. The picture of the house is completed by the portrait of its mistress. Madame Vacher at the age of 50 is like all women who have seen a deal of trouble. She has the glassy eyes and innocent air of a trafficker in flesh and blood, who will wax virtuously indignant to obtain a higher price for her services, but who is quite ready to betray a Georges or a Pichegru, if a Georges or a Pichegru were in hiding and still to be betrayed, or for any other expedient that may alleviate her lot. Still, she is a good woman at bottom, said the lodgers who believed that the widow was wholly dependent upon the money that they paid her, and sympathized when they heard her coffin groan like one of themselves.